What if I told you there's a way you could be a second shooter at a family session so you can see exactly how the photographer prepares, how they interact with their clients, what they say when they're posing, or when they choose to use fluid motion, what they do when kids might not cooperate or dad might not be in the session? What if I told you there's a way you can see what the gear is that they're using, where they're positioning themselves when they're shooting, what factors they're taking into consideration when they're shooting? What if I told you there was a way you could see what their straight out of camera images look like, and then you could see their editing process too, so you know exactly how they get those start to finish images and those polished ones you see in your Instagram feed? Now, what if I told you could be that second shooter without ever having to leave your house? What if I told you that not only do you get to watch it from home, but you didn't have to remember every single thing you were trying to learn the first time you watched it? What if you could watch and rewatch as much as you wanted? How would that improve your images, your posing, your confidence? Now, what if I told you there is a way you could be a second shooter not only for one photographer, but 26? That's exactly what you'll experience inside the 2024 Online Family Retreat. Your inspiration will soar, your art will improve, your posing will become more fluid, and your confidence is going to increase so, so much. And honestly, your clients are going to feel so much more comfortable. Head on over to themilkyway.ca/family retreat. It all gets underway May 29th, and we hope to see you there.
But if you boil everything I say down to this one thing, it's this quote by J.L. Collins, and the book is A Simple Path to Wealth. It's spend less than you earn, invest the rest, avoid debt. That's it. It's like, if you can just do that in your photography business, if you can do that in your personal life, you will be really far ahead of 90% of the other people.
Welcome to the Art and Soul Show, where we dive into heart-opening chats on photography, business, life, and that messy in-between. I'm your host, Lisa DeJaso, a mom, a photographer, and entrepreneur, and I'll be sharing honest conversations and advice for photographers with insight on mindset, entrepreneurship, and creativity. The goal of this podcast is for you to be able to gain insights and strategies that will get you real results. Because let's face it, having a photography business can be lonely, but it doesn't have to be. This is the place you can go when you need a boost of encouragement, a kick in the pants, and inspiration to pick up your camera. This is the Art and Soul Show. Hello, my beautiful friends. Welcome back to the show. Today, I'm super excited to dive into today's conversation with Daniel Moyer. Daniel is a photographer, podcaster, photography business educator, empath, and blind optimist in the best sense of the word. He's on a journey to guide photographers to find the missing ingredients to building a meaningful, joy-filled, and profitable photography business. He's also the host of the Focus Photographers podcast, and I was introduced to him by my dear friend, Coley James, and I am so excited to dive into our conversation today. So welcome, Daniel.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad that Coley set us up to make this happen. It's going to be a good one.
Totally. So beyond your bio, tell us who you are and what you're passionate about.
I am a father of three. I have 3-year-old twins and a 6-year-old, not fraternal twins. My wife and I have been married for almost 10 years, 9 years actually in like the end of this month. I'm a photographer for over 13 years and only recently discovered sort of the passion that I'm really excited about, guiding people into their next phase of their life, whether that's a really exciting business expansion or just becoming the best version of themselves. So that's me.
I love that. So I read, and I love this when I read that you're an empath, because I think that there are, like, I'm a sensitive empathic soul.
Yes.
And I think that we're labeled as oversensitive. I know that I was. So can you maybe share how you've tapped into that, embraced it, and you've made it into a superpower?
This is a really sweet question and one that I've never been asked before. So like, I don't know, it's sweet. I think a lot of people see empathy or like oversensitivity or anybody who's like overfeeling as weakness, right? And I used to think that same thing too, where it was like my kindness at a wedding day or my agreeability or my thoughtfulness was weakness and that I'm easy to like walk over, which is not the case. I just want people to like be the best version of themselves. And I remember when this shifted for me, I was at a workshop. It was a Steve Saporito workshop where we had to do this exercise where we had to talk with another person that was at the event, and we had to just use these active listening skills. And we weren't allowed to like hang out on version 1.0 of conversation. We had to really try to dive down. And now I was already an emotional wreck because my first daughter had just been born. I was away from her for like, you know, 3-4 days. And it was just like, I felt like I was neglecting them, and there was all this stuff. And I remember like squeaky voice crying out loud in the middle of the workshop. And like just, so it was not a great situation for me to be in. And I'm like, I am so embarrassed. I like can't keep it together. And I'm going into this exercise thinking all this. And as we start going through it, this was like the second round, and I'm realizing like this is very natural for me, like talking with this other person who I actually know nothing about, but he was really opening up to me, and I had no understanding of what he was going through, but I really felt like I was able to help him sort of work through it, and I was able to come alongside of him on that journey just by asking questions. I was like, wow, this feels really good. And afterwards, like, we sort of adjourned, and then we got back into the big group. And everybody was talking about how it went. And in front of sort of everybody at the workshop, he was like, I just want to take a moment and thank Dan for like his thoughtful questions, because he was so, so thoughtful and so careful with his questions about this like really sensitive thing. And it was at that moment that I knew that like my empathy and my ability to step into people's shoes was a superpower and not something to hide behind. And I said that through a squeaky voice anyway, too. So, but like, you know, I'm still working through it, but I tend to over-emotionalize things a lot still, but I'm much more confident in that ability to step into people's shoes and be emotional with them.
I love that, because I used to spend so much time in the girls' washroom crying, throughout my whole high school. I would just be in there in tears because I just had so many big feelings about everything.
About everything. Yeah.
Yes. And I remember like being a first time mom, and just a commercial came on and I just was gushing, like just sobbing.
Yeah.
And my husband's like, what is with you? I'm like, number one, I'm like, I just had a baby. But number two, like, I just have a lot of feelings.
Yeah.
Like, I can't help it. Like, I'm someone who has a lot of feelings to begin with. So just go with it, man. Like,
yep.
Enjoy the ride.
Yeah. My wife and I are the same thing. We were like, we ball all the time at like Ted Lasso and all that kind of stuff. It's just, yeah, all the little kind of stuff sets us off, especially about kids or relationships or our parents or like wanting to be better versions of ourselves or whatever it is. Yep. I'm right there with you.
Well, I think it's just so fascinating, like societally, how being a sensitive or an emotional person has always been such like a shameful thing, or like something to look down on people about, when truly, like, especially as photographers, being able to like step into our clients' shoes or just feel what they're feeling, or like you can even see like in a person's eyes when the session changes and you can tell that they've lost that confidence and that feeling.
Yep.
You know intuitively, because you are empathetic, how to adjust and how to position yourself to make things more comfortable for them.
Yep.
So I just think, like, let's dive into that. Let's tap into that and make that. That's just something we talk more about, and we teach our children that being sensitive is it's such a gift.
Yeah. One thing you just said brought up this from a podcast episode that I was recording with a few friends, where it's like in the beginning when you're a photographer, you like go through these posing flows and you want to like get the awesome picture and get like the big award-winning thing or whatever it is. But it's like the longer I've been in business, the more I realize like the night shot that I have to get at a wedding, a lot of couples don't care about it. And it's like they just... I need to be in touch with what they're needing and what they're feeling. You can see something flash across, you know, somebody's face who you're photographing, or you can see when they're checked out and they're done, and they're done with pictures and they want to get back to the reception and whatever it is. But like, yeah, it's like those things. It's like, wow, like I can pick up on these things. I can tell when somebody's done. And it's like, yeah, let me just go with that. And people comment on that afterwards. They're like, yeah, you just seemed like you knew exactly what we wanted and what we needed and let us do it.
Yeah.
Yep. I feel that.
It's like learning how to be an empathetic listener, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe like with body language. I don't know. I do it a lot with newborns. I'm a newborn photographer and I specialize with maternity and newborn. So, and it's funny because I know what my babies want. I know, like, I can tell when they start to move in a certain way. I'm like, okay, like we don't need to get her like super upset and in tears because she's hungry, and I can tell she's hungry because she's giving me cues. So let's just like take care of that before she gets upset.
Yeah.
Oh. And parents are like, how did you know that? I'm like, I don't know. I'm just
the baby whisperer.
I felt like it. I felt that. Right?
Yeah. Right? It's such a feeling thing, but some people don't have it. And it's like, okay, this actually is like a superpower. Like, I think if, I don't know if there's an emotional IQ test, but if if there is, and I know that there's a lot of research coming out about emotional IQ, I know I'll be high on it because I feel like I can just pick out things or pick up little things that people are feeling or when they send like those little signs, right? I 100% believe that's a superpower. Yeah.
Absolutely. And like as humans, like we're always like we're energetic based and we're like emitting these frequencies of like you can feel it. You can feel like you probably feel it on the other end. Like, I'm lit up today. You're my fourth podcast today. And I get to do, this is my favorite thing to do.
Four. Yeah, that's amazing. Good for you. Holy moly.
I love it. I love it.
Hashtag batch content.
Hashtag smart working.
Crushed it.
I love it. But it's true. It's like tapping into your superpower as an emotional genius, I think. And even like just teaching kids. So how are you teaching? Are you working with your kids on, like, do you find that they're empathetic? And how do you cultivate that in them?
That's a big question. Each of my kids is so massively different.
Right.
Regina is girl twin, Henry's boy twin, and then Alice is the oldest, who's six. And Alice is just like free flowing spirited, like very just, you know, go with the wind. She can get really into something or not. She is the feeler, right? So when something happens with one of the twins or something, she comes running right over and wants to pick them up and love them. And so she's the deep empath already. Regina, we're working on to be a little more empathetic, because right now she's going to be a boss CEO who takes no crap from anybody.
Love it.
So it's like, I don't want to squander that
totally, and
you know, go off of that or anything, but I also want to be like, hey, there's other feelings out here other than your own. You have to think about those. And then Henry's just like, he's like me. He's a deep feeler. He's really highly emotional as it is, and very aware of what other people are doing and wants to be part of the group. So like, we're already there with all of them, except Regina needs a little bit of molding, maybe.
I love that. Oh, Regina.
A little bit of guiding.
Yeah. She's going to nail it, though.
I'm so, but like, they're all so different. It's like, I can't wait to see what this one does and what that one does. It's going to be good.
My son's 13, and he's our one and only and our little miracle. And it's really interesting just watching yourself and sometimes like your best characteristics and also sometimes your worst ones through your children.
Yeah. I'm like, oh man, I've downloaded this kind of stuff onto my kids' pristine little hard drives. Like, why did that have to come out or something like that? But
yeah, it's programming. They'll figure out in their 40s.
In their 40s. Oh, great. Mom!
I know, right? It's your fault, Mom. All right. So we're going to talk a little bit about mindset today. And I would like to talk about maybe some of the common, specifically money mindset. So what are some common money mindset pitfalls that you encounter with photographers?
It's a big question, because it's all like, everybody's got a little something different. Like, but when I reached out to my community a while ago, I asked one simple question. I was like, hey, if you were to describe your relationship with money in one word, what would it be? And the responses I got were overwhelmingly negative. It was things like strained, confusing, avoiding, unimportant, tiresome, all things like that. And to be fair, there were a couple that were like, you know, it's freedom or provides freedom, things like that. And I was wondering, like, where did this all come from? And if you ever heard of this thing called the Klontz Money Script Inventory, does that sound familiar at all?
No.
Okay. There's a guy who's a financial psychologist, his name was Brad Klontz, and he came up with these like four scripts that we tell ourselves. And I'm not going to go through them all because it'd be too much time for the podcast, but there are basically four of them: money avoidance, money status, money worship, and then money vigilant. The money avoidance cycle seems to be what I see in a lot of photographers. And that's like this idea that a lot of photographers will tell themselves that they're not a numbers person. They're creative, and they don't even try. Like, they're not even interested. Like, I can't understand it. I'm not a numbers person. I'm a creative. Like, I can't do anything with that. And so that's like the first part. And then avoiding looking at your numbers only increases your likelihood to overspend, because you're trying to avoid it and make yourself feel better by not looking at it. And you're just wanting to live free and whatever. And then you say like, oh crap, my finances are not actually that great. And it's just this endless cycle of like going around and around this circle of avoiding and then trying to see the truth and then realizing that you suck at numbers. And you're just like, I don't know what to do. So I see that one a lot with photographers where like, I'm not a numbers person. The two other ones that I would say maybe, and I can just quickly go over them, is that a lot of photographers have an overfixation on money as the solution to like their, like that's going to be the solution to all their problems. And I think part of it is, in fact, like our industry loves this marketing term where we say six figures. Like,
I know.
I'm going to be the six figure photographer. And
but
don't
why?
Get me wrong. Right? Like, I'm totally fine with like, you know, you need to hit money numbers, you need to hit goals, you need to be profitable, all that stuff. But it seems like that is like the goal that you see over and over again, right? Like, if I hit six figures, I'm going to make it. All my problems are going to be solved. And then the last one, which I think is maybe the most tricky one because it involves so many layers, is defining what enough is for them as an individual, right? Or in other words, like, what do they actually need to make, or how much money do they actually need to make in order to live the life that they want and confidently be able to turn away work and set appropriate boundaries and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, there's a lot in there.
Interesting. There is a lot there. I love that. I think a lot of the times you don't even realize that you are doing that. Like, speaking from experience, like, there was years I didn't even pay myself because I didn't even know I was supposed to. I was just like taking that money and just throwing it back into my business, buying props and like thinking, oh yeah, but I'm profitable. I'm like, baby girl, that's not profit.
Right. That's not right. You deserve to have some money too.
I'd like some money, please. Oh dear. So what shifts do you think with mindset would help to get over the avoidance and the overspending that we, as many photographers, do?
So there's like, I think it's first, it's like intimidation, right? Because that one I said before about how many photographers, like, they're just like, say they're not a numbers person.
Yeah.
I think just getting like your hands dirty and just getting over that initial concern about like just being intimidated by numbers and you're going to make a mistake or whatever it is. Because I think so many photographers define their relationship as they're not a numbers person. So why bother? And numbers are intimidating, but I think the shift is that money's just a tool. And that is what, like, that is what we all need to realize, is that money is just a tool for getting where you want to go in life. And it deserves no more power or no less power than it just deserves to get you to this point, right? And where we want to go, I think if we go back to that Klontz Miniscript inventory thing, it's going to look different for everybody, but I think it's a set of values or a set of principles that you can say, okay, this is where I want to get, right? And this is that money vigilant, one of those Klontz Miniscript inventories. The three of them are usually like sort of negative ones. And this last one, the money vigilant one, is really important. And it's considered the healthiest one, but like these people that adopt this money vigilance mindset tend to believe that money is helpful to get them to where they want to go in life. They recognize it as a powerful part in making life easier, but it's also, money in itself doesn't bring happiness, right? It just goes back to that tool thing, that like, it's not like you're trying to get to this specific number, then everything's going to be okay, right? Because when you get there, the problem with like, we're all wired for desire. We're all wired to like get to this thing of like, I want more. I want this. I want the bigger house, the bigger car, or whatever. And that's why just talking about like, what is enough for you, defining that. So that way, when you get to this point of, okay, I've gotten here, I'm good, I'm all set, that's when you can say like, okay, I am content with where I'm at. And I think the last part is just like focusing on saving for the sake of saving, focusing on frugality. Like, that's the place that we want to go. So if that's where we want to get, you have to focus on the habits that lead you to that place.
Right. And so like, if you're overspending, if you get like a client and you're spending $600 and you're only charging $500, there's a problem there, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Having like a six-figure business says nothing if your expenses are $90,000, right? No, you have a $10,000 business.
Yeah. No, it was funny because it was a few years ago. I used to do holiday mini sessions and I loved them. Like, I loved them, but the problem is I am a reformed people pleaser and I'm getting better at saying no.
Yeah.
Okay. So I booked 87 holiday mini sessions.
Holy moly.
In a month period, and drove myself into the ground. And because I'm not just like a mini session kind of person, I'm an over deliverer. Like, my mini sessions were like 40 images. Like, that's not mini anything, right?
Right.
And very like all the sets and the costumes and everything. So it came to, I think it was actually, oddly enough, Christmas morning, Eve morning.
Yeah.
So it was the day before Christmas, and I was finally crunching my numbers for what I did, what I spent for the holiday mini sessions of 87. I made $4,000 for all that work. And I just sat and I sob cried. And I was like, why did I do that?
Right.
Why did I do that to myself? Why did I say yes to, like, I missed so much. I missed my son's school play. I missed so much by trying to make everybody happy, and I've made myself miserable. And I thought I was doing it for the money, but I wasn't.
Do you think that you had to go through that to like shock value, learn to not do it?
I think that I had to do that repeatedly.
Got it.
And then I finally got it.
Yeah.
It was that specifically because I'd been doing it for 8 years and it was just progressively getting worse and worse and worse.
Oh man.
And I kept like avoiding and pretending it wasn't happening.
Yep.
And then I finally was like, okay, let's just actually see. Like, I feel like I was really profitable this year. And like, nope.
Nope.
Girl, you were not. Nope.
That's so brutal. Like when you find out, like, I remember when I kind of came to my financial awakening was I was driving to a session and it was outside of Philly and I was driving across this bridge. And earlier in the day, I'd had this phone call, like sort of toward the ends of the year, had the phone call with my accountant. It was like, hey, this is what taxes are going to be like. And he's like, you had a great year. You're going to have so much money, all that kind of stuff. I'm like, wow, this is great. And I'm driving across the bridge. I should be ecstatic, but I'm angry because I'm like, this dude's saying like I'm supposed to have this really amazing year, but where's that money at?
Yeah.
Because it's surely not in my bank account.
What did I do with it?
And it was just like, and it's not even like it was in my personal bank account. I was just spending money on like stupid stuff, like going out to drinks and dinner with my wedding clients and spending it on like stupid upgrades or whatever. And I think it's just like, I don't know, sometimes you need that like awakening, that thing to shake you and say, no, like you could be doing this better.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. And I think, I mean, that's like, it's funny because a lot of times you think of things like that as failure and mm-hmm. it's not, because it's really just lessons, or it's like business rock bottom.
Right? Yeah.
And you just like, you kind of have to hit there to like find your way out and through and up and get into financial recovery, I guess. So.
Yeah. How long have you been a photographer for?
Since 2010.
Okay. Same here. Okay. So we're in like the same boat where I think when you and I started, there wasn't that many podcasts about photography. There wasn't like
nothing.
I remember being on the Digital Wedding Forum, the DWF.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's where everybody went to ask questions. But it's like, how great is it now that we're having a conversation about this, that any newcomer in year 1 through 3 can come on and talk about, or like hear about the stuff that we did the hard way. And it's like, oh, okay. Like, I need to make sure I know my numbers. I need to dive into these things and make sure that I'm doing this before the session and figuring out that I'm not going to make $4,000 after you shoot 87 sessions or whatever it is, you know?
Right. And like, and just like I wish I wish there was something like this out there, but would I have listened anyway? Probably not.
No, there was no, I mean, I was on MySpace and like that was it. Like MySpace and.
I was on Flickr and Flickr, I was on ilovephotography.com was the one I was on.
Oh.
And it was so funny because back in the day, it was like, if you were a mom and you had a camera, you were a mom with a camera. And that was like super shameful. Like.
What?
No. Yeah. It was like so bad to be a mom with a camera. Ew. Yeah. So, but yeah, no, it's like, now it's like, yeah, I'm a mom who's a photographer. Cool.
Like, yeah, there's like, right? There's like a whole like thousands like a million and thousands. Of us. Yeah, momtographers, right? Isn't there like a momtog Facebook group that there has like is. A billion photographers in it? It's awesome.
But it's crazy. And it was so funny, like the industry back then and how it's really like, it's changed so much. It's just changed. I think I love it because there is more availability for conversations like this that I wish that we would have listened to or had.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
So in what other ways can photographers plan for success in their photography businesses and start to change their relationship with money?
All right, let's get into some like rubber hits the road kind of stuff here. This is good. So like, so I think there's two ways where it's like, okay, this is how we start to change the relationship with money. And a lot of it is like, okay, what's the saying? Mold grows in the dark, flowers bloom in the sun, right? It's like part of it is just getting your hands dirty. So there's, I think whenever I coach photographers on this or coach clients on this, it's like a two-step process and they both are equally important. The first part is defining your values. It's like, why are we going to talk about defining values if we're talking about money? It's because you need like a North Star to like say like, this is what I'm going to spend money on. This is important. This is where I'm trying to go. This is the dream, like all that stuff, right? And it's simple. It's just asking yourself, well, what do you value? Do you value free time? Do you value your weekends? Do you value time with your kids? Do you value hard work, your fitness, your health? Do you value being debt free, right? Like those are the questions you have to ask yourself. And you take that, you write a big list, an exhaustive list of all the things that you truly value. And you know that you value them. Do you know Nathan Holritz? He hosts the Boca podcast. Okay. I talked with him about this and he said like, he's like, you know, your values when you bump into them and it creates like this experience inside of you, right? Like, you know, when it's like, oh, like you had this really great conversation with a friend and it's like, wow, I really value that friendship. Or it's like, ooh, I talked smack on somebody and that made me not feel good. Or like, ooh, I wanted to go on this vacation this year, but I actually spent too much like ordering food in every single week or something like that, right? It's like, no, this is where I'm trying to go. I want to have a month off with my family every year. It's like, that's what I value. Well, if that's the thing you value most, then all of the ordering pizza an extra couple times a week maybe that's something that's easy for you to cut, right? Or maybe dinners around the table or something that you absolutely love. And it's like, no, I desperately want to actually be able to eat dinner with my family. I love whatever it is, right? Knowing those values and getting crystal clear on what those values are and where you want to go is step number one. Feel me?
Yeah, absolutely.
The next part is I call it getting the big picture. Follow me on this because there's lots of apps that do this and all that kind of stuff. But I'm going to take a step back and say that we need to get pen and paper out and just put a pen and paper down on our desk and open up our bank account. The things we need to do analog about this are, let me put it this way. Apps that do budgeting for you and stuff are really great, but there's this huge learning curve. And it's really easy to get frustrated with them and fall off because you don't know how to use it, or it's frustrating, or whatever it is, or you have to take time to set it up, whatever it is. This analog process is opening up your bank statement and taking a piece of paper and a pencil and writing a couple of headings on the top of the paper and then categorizing every one of your transactions for 1 month. So here's what we're going to do. Get a pen and paper out. How many times can I say pen and paper in this conversation? Goodness gracious. You write out these headings at the top of your paper. Housing, which is basically rent and mortgage. Utilities, which is phone, cable, water, internet, that kind of thing. Childcare is part of that. Groceries. Not food, groceries. This is getting food from the grocery store. Eating out is going to be in the splurge category, which is coming up after debts. Debts is going to be your student loans, car payments, credit cards, that kind of stuff. The fifth one is splurge. And that's where all the non-essential items go into. Last one, in our house, we have an Amazon account an Amazon list, because there's so much stuff just gets thrown in there. Like, it could be business stuff. It could be kids' swimsuits. It could be a tofu press that I just purchased, right? Like, it's just a million things. But this is what you do, and you open up your bank account and you categorize all of your transactions from 1 month time into those categories. That's it. You need to do this for 3 random months. I like doing like a March because it's boring and winter brown over here and like nothing much happens. I also do like a July because usually we're going on vacation in July. We're spending maybe a little more money. And then maybe also do like a November because Christmas comes up and we usually buy a lot of gifts and stuff in November. So I want like a wide variety picture of like how much are we spending. And again, this is like a half hour activity. If you drink, get a glass of wine, sit down and just like write out all these things. And you're getting this big picture. That's the goal. What do you do with this information? My personal belief is that it is way easier to spend less than it is to make more.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you stop trying to make more, but you have to look at these things and say, wow, I didn't realize that I was eating out this much or going to Starbucks this much or paying for flight upgrades or whatever it is. And there's areas that you're looking at and you're saying, I really don't need to spend this money. And that's where it goes back to having the values. It's like, okay, I want to have that month-long vacation with my family. I need to cut in these areas so I can get to that point. What I do in my life is from this information, I create a real budget where you say, okay, I'm adding up all my expenses, all this stuff, every transaction came out of my bank account. And I want those total monthly expenses to be 75% or less of the amount of money I brought into that account. So 75% or less is the money that went out of the total amount that came in. Am I explaining that right? You following?
Yeah, because then you retain 25%.
Yeah. So you want to get to this 25% savings rate or more, right? Like, that's just a starting point, I think, for a lot of people. But some people have said 25% and they're like, what? I haven't gotten 3% saved. But yeah, just go through and just get this big picture. Just write it out. It'll take 30 minutes, an hour, and you just all of a sudden have this picture of the financial health of your personal life. And you can do this with your business as well and keep going. And then you just have these two pictures of like what things look like, and you can really start and get the tip of the iceberg from there.
Absolutely. Because looking at that data, you can't really be that emotional about it because you're like, these are the decisions I made.
This is it.
Right? I did that. So I can make different choices next time if that's going to lead me to my goal, or make these decisions that are going to lead me away.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah. And I think it's just the values thing, right? Like when I was going across the bridge and my accountant had called me earlier in the day, I remember feeling, like I said, really upset about this whole thing. But I looked down and I like had this, you know, Starbucks, and I'm not going to hammer on Starbucks. I'm not going to be between somebody and their Starbucks, right? But like, I was spending an inordinate amount of money on Starbucks and cafes and all that stuff when I had a mountain of debt, over $100,000 worth of debt sitting over here that I was ignoring. And I'm somebody who would say, I value my family. I value my financial freedom. I value all this stuff. And it took like this jolt of me saying, wow, like I'm saying that I really value these things, but I'm not actually doing the effort. I'm not doing the actual work to create the budget and live and stick by it so I can be debt free. And so I can send my kids to college, which my parents didn't pay for me. And I want to do that for them and all this stuff, right? Like, it's like you have to do the work in order to get to where you want to go. And all that little stuff, all the little things they used to buy, all the little upgrades or whatever, pale in comparison to me wanting to send my kids through college or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. It's funny you mentioned Starbucks because I literally have had one Starbucks coffee in like 2 years.
Yeah.
Like that's it. And I used to go all the time. And what actually changed was like we did have a breakdown of how much I was spending going to like fast food places or like Starbucks. And then my husband, he was like, how about you can still go, but you're only going to get a $100 gift card. And that's going to last you the whole year.
Ooh, cool.
And I was like, oh, challenge accepted, sir.
Wow.
And then, yeah. And then I just kind of forgot to go.
Yeah.
And I probably still have $50 on it.
Like, sweet. Right? Splurge tonight. Interesting. One of the things I did is like, so I'd have to take my daughter to daycare, and on the way home, I would literally either drive past a Starbucks or a Dunkin' Donuts. And I was like, so tempted every time. Cause it's like I like the commute working from home. It's like, I need something that breaks up like family time of the day
yes.
from work time of the day. And getting a coffee was always that.
Yeah.
So now I said, for me, it was, I was opening up my credit card and I would put $5 on paying on my credit card every single time. Every time I felt that like urge, I would go buy it.
Yeah.
That was my thing. And I would start and just like start paying it down.
Nice.
Because the debt was the thing that was crushing every part of my being back in the day. It was brutal.
It really does. And you know, what is interesting and what you never really hear talked about much is the effect debt and even business financial debt has, the effect it has is on relationships,
yeah,
on families, on marriages. And we don't really talk about that. Like it's a big thing.
Yeah. There's a lot of heavy, you know, conversation there with my wife and I when we were really trying to figure out like what our relationship looks like, because her parents paid for college. She was a teacher. I went to a liberal arts school and I went for fine arts. Well, it's not like you buy your books and your notebooks and you're good for the year. I was spending hundreds, if not thousands of dollars a month on photography supplies, on film, paint, on different kinds of paints, on canvases and all that kind of stuff. And I came out of college with a ton of debt. Then when I started my business, I was, you know, buying everything on credit because that's just what I thought was the right thing to do. That's what I thought the key to financial freedom was like buying things you can't afford on credit. And then like, you just look like you're successful or whatever. Boy, did I have it wrong.
I know. You know, it's funny because I'm a newborn maternity photographer, as I've mentioned before.
Yeah.
And our thing is like the props. And it kills me. It kills me because like, I'm an educator and I love it. But what I love to teach is like you really don't need that many things.
Right.
Like it's so addictive to get the newest blanket or this hat or these headbands. And they're not cheap. But when you see these studios that are just chock full of them, it hurts me in my heart because I've also been there and I know how much these cost and how much these new photographers are spending. And the ones that see this think that's the way that it's supposed to be.
Right.
Right. And it's so sad because it's not. It's not. We're supposed to be profitable. Like why on earth are we doing business if we're not?
Yeah. If you're not paying yourself, if you're not like, this goes, it's so hard. Like because in the world of Pinterest and Instagram and like that's the highlight reels, it's like, oh, I'm, you know, I'm supposed to like have this huge variety of like dresses and stuff for kids and props and all that kind of stuff. But I think photographers a lot of times put themselves last in everything. They put themselves last for paying themselves. They put themselves last for like on their calendar, on their schedule. They put themselves last by giving themselves the leftovers of their time. Do you know what Parkinson's Law is?
No, but tell me more.
Parkinson's Law basically says that work expands to meet the allotted time for
the container. Yes.
So it's like, it's the same thing with your schedule, right? Like you book yourself crazy because you're how much money you make is tied to how much you work, right? And it's like, you just end up getting overwhelmed because you're not giving yourself the time first. So I think we have to shift that, right? The same thing is said for money, where if you don't pay yourself first, if you don't give money to where money actually needs to go, if you don't sustain your lifestyle and your business, then it's going to get spent elsewhere. And, you know, whether it's on props or whatever it is, like I remember before I had a system for organizing money inside of my business, I would just have like a big chunk of money sitting in there. And it's like, if the account's not at zero, like I'm set, right? Like I got money to spend.
Yep.
But the problem is like that money is actually earmarked for paying a second photographer, for paying cost of goods sold, for paying taxes, or for paying myself. And I was not pulling money out of that. And that money would just get spent. And all of a sudden it'd be like, oh my goodness, I haven't moved money over to pay myself first. And now I screwed myself because I paid that because I told my clients I would go out to eat with them and pay for dinner. Or I had a wedding outside of the state and I paid for first class upgrade or whatever right? It is.
And you're always like, I deserve it. I deserve yeah. it. I deserve it. Right.
Like, yeah, it so is. But again, this comes back to the values thing. It's like, what do I really value and where am I trying to get to?
Yeah.
And that just does not align with where anybody's trying to go. And it just becomes this thing where you have to be really reflective with seeing what's out there and like being inspired by other photographers and everything, but also by saying like, I'm good with what I have right here. I'm good with these props. I'm good with this kind of stuff or whatever it is.
Yeah, completely. Because I've been eyeballing the Nikon Z9.
Ooh.
And I got the Nikon Z7 II or whatever, the mirrorless one. And I was like, I'm not even shooting this year, Dan. Like, I'm not taking clients. Why do I need a new camera? Like,
but it's fun because you're still an artist, right? You're still a creative.
I am. I'm just like, that's not in my budget this year. You can save up, Lisa.
Yesterday, I literally switched back from Sony to Nikon.
Did you really?
Yeah. I was Nikon since like 2008 to 2020. And then I switched over to Sony. And then now I'm switching back. And I crunched the numbers before I made the switch. And I will make money on the trade.
Good.
By buying the Z6 IIs and selling my A9s.
Yep.
So yeah, financial decision. Got it.
Did you sell your lenses too?
Yeah, selling everything.
Oh,
going from Sony to Nikon. So like everything's going.
Oh my gosh. And so you had gone from Nikon to Sony. And so originally you got rid of all your Nikons and now you're going to get
all of it, everything.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. In 2020, like I was selling everything out.
Wow.
And I finally sold like the last couple pieces, like maybe 6 months ago, which is kind of funny. So I was like, I had D850s then. And now I'm moving back to like the whole mirrorless line from Nikon. So it's different stuff anyway, but
it's so like, it's funny. Cause like I'm having a hard time cause I'm a D5. I love my D5. I've loved my Ooh. D5 for years.
Yeah.
But I've got the mirrorless and I'm really trying to love it and I'm just not loving it. I'm trying.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I know. Oh, I'm like man. The only one.
Yeah. There's definitely some people who like still love their, like I know plenty of people who still love their like Canon 5Ds and plenty of people who love their like Nikon. I love the D850s. I love that camera, but I'm just going to go mirrorless because
go mirrorless.
Where
I'm gonna go. Yep. I love it. What's your go-to lens?
So I'm highly documentary approach. So it's like a 35 millimeter, keep it at that. And a good, probably like 75% of the wedding day is on that 35. And then the 85 is on the other body and that's it.
Yeah. Have you played this with the Sigma Art lenses at all for Nikon?
Yes. So I had, so not with the Nikon, no. Well, actually with the D850s, I used to have the Sigma 135 F2 and I had a Sigma 35 1.4, I think is what it was. And both of those were like, really lovely. They were beautiful lenses.
Yeah. That's one thing that I've noticed with Nikon is like the Sigma lenses are like chef's kiss. Like I love those.
Yeah. They're not, it doesn't seem like they're Sigma is making anything for like the Nikon Z series lenses yet. They like, I guess they haven't released like the specs.
No, they have like I think it's the adapter because I bought the adapter. And so now my lenses work. So
I'll have to buy the adapter apparently.
Yeah.
Or wait until Nikon decides to give their specs to Sigma. I know. Come on, Nikon, if you're listening, let's go.
I love it. So are you ready for our lightning round?
Oh, snap. Yes. Okay. I'm not prepared for this.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Most luxurious vacation you've ever been on?
All of my vacations over in the past have been with weddings. So my wife used to come along to a lot of the weddings with me. So let's just go coolest wedding. I shot a wedding that my wife came along. It was like 13 people at the base of a broken down castle in Heidelberg, Germany. That's pretty cool.
Oh, so cool.
It was beautiful.
I love it. Love it. Last thing you did for yourself as an indulgence?
Bought Crumble with my wife and we're going to do it again tonight. Do you know what Crumble is? Do you guys have that out there? Yeah, it's like a cookie.
No.
Cookie company. It's like it's a cookie company franchise and they just make like, they have new cookies every single week. The cookies are like 5 inches. They're huge and they're delectable. So they change every single week and it's like $25 for like 4 cookies. which is very expensive and it hurts my heart to spend it. But my wife and I love to just like, it's like our date night thing. Every 2 weeks we have like a date night and that's on our calendar. Nothing breaks that. And we just decide what we want to do. So Crumble, date night.
Love it. Love it. No, we don't have Crumble. I was thinking it was like, I don't know, Crumble, like with berries and like oats. And
I do love berries.
I don't know. Is that Canadian? That's a Canadian thing, maybe. I don't know.
Hey. Berries, hey.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry to all my Canadian friends.
That's all right. That's what we're all about.
About, yeah.
What's your favorite movie?
My wife and I, so I have lots of favorite movies, but the one that's the go-to with my wife and I, it's like the one that we always just sit down and watch a million times, this movie called Michael with John Travolta, where he's like an archangel and he comes down and tries to get these people together and he's like really irreverent. Yeah, that's the word. And he like smokes and eats too much sugar. It's a really funny movie. It's great. It's a sweet one.
That's a good one. Have you seen About Time?
I don't think so, no.
You should look that one up. I think... like if you guys like have like to have tissue movies together, like this is a gooder.
Okay. About Time movie. Got it. Written down.
What's the best gift you've ever received?
Best gift. Oh man. Obviously the past 3 years, the pandemic were very, very tricky.
Yeah.
I'm like I said, extreme empath. I love to be around people. I'm an extrovert and being cooped up, even though I love my children, I love my wife, being cooped up was very, very difficult. And the year before, so 2022, for my birthday, my wife hid it from me that she got this thing called a solo stove. And it's this big, like, bonfire, smokeless fire pit. And she got it for my birthday. And then one day we came back from my mother-in-law's house and she's like, hey, can you go in the basement and get this thing for me? And I went into the basement and 8 of my closest friends were in the basement, just like hanging out. They had like hot dogs and beer and like they brought baskets of wood and we just like hung out in the backyard because we still weren't comfortable like having everybody in the house and stuff. So we just like had a fire pit, hang out in the backyard and like made hot dogs and s'mores and choking up just thinking about it because it was one of the most beautiful, most thoughtful things that anybody's ever given me. It's exactly what I needed and it was so beautiful. It was good.
Ah, I love that. Oh, that's wonderful. Honestly, the podcast got me through the pandemic.
Yeah.
Starting a podcast and just talking to people. It got me through. Yeah.
I feel that.
Yeah. When do you feel most centered and happy?
At the end of a day where I've like checked off the list of like all the things that I love to do, which is usually like meditate, like reconnect deeply with my children, laugh with my wife, exercise, stretch, like all the things that you like just that you would just say like, oh, this was a good day. It's like all those things that I could just check off that. Or when I can check those things off, that's what gives me like a self high five.
I love that. What has been the best piece of business advice you've ever been given?
There's something I read in a book, but if you boil everything I say down to this one thing, it's this quote by J.L. Collins. And the book is A Simple Path to Wealth. It's spend less than you earn, invest the rest, avoid debt. That's it. It's like, if you can just do that in your photography business, if you can do that in your personal life, you will be really far ahead of 90% of the other people.
So true. Love that. So where can our listeners learn more from you?
They can find me. My website is focusedphotographers.com. That's my coaching platform that will soon be linked to my life coaching business because I've realized that life and business are so dramatically intertwined that it's hard to talk about one without the other. You can follow me at Get Focused Photographers on Instagram. And I have a little freebie to download if you want to like...
Yes, please.
Awesome. Okay. If you go to focusedphotographers.com/FF, like finance focused, you can download basically it's... So I'm not a CPA. I'm not an accountant. I can't tell people what to do with their money, but I can show you some of the mindset things that I've learned over the last couple of years in a much more succinct way. And then the steps that my wife and I use to really get out of basically to pay $70,000 worth of debt off in 3 years and really implement systems to take control of your finances. So it's not such a scary, big, ominous thing.
I love that. Well, Dan, you're going to have to come back on the show again.
Sounds good. I'm ready for it.
I love it.
So much we didn't talk about. I know.
So much. Well, I love to end my interviews just with this last question. And it is, what are you currently curious about or artistically curious about?
I actually think it's something I already said, which is how much life and business really interact with each other. I've just been a business coach for a while. I've realized recently how much of the conversations I have with my one-on-one students are about life and about like relationships with their spouse and about managing money and about setting boundaries up because they want more time with their family. And it's not just like pricing, profit, sales, no. You know, that kind of stuff. It's so much more than that. And I'm really interested in that. And I think that's where the life coaching business is going to come in.
I love it. I think you're on the right path. I love it. Woo. Well, thanks, Dan, for joining me today. It's been awesome chatting with you.
Thank you.
Oh, my beautiful friends, I hope you have loved this conversation just as much as I did. I'm sending you so much of my light and my love today and every single day. We will see you next time. Hey, friend, you know what's the worst? It's just being mid-session and completely freezing. You start to feel awkward, your clients start looking at you for direction, and your brain feels like you just hit a wall. Now, believe me, you are not alone. And that's why we created the Storyteller's Toolkit. It's an emotive prompt guide to help sessions stay free-flowing and fun. And best of all, right now, it's totally free. It's full of prompts for parents, motherhood, family, siblings, and couples, and even surefire smile prompts. We've put together over 200 prompts for you, so you'll never be at loss for an idea again. Grab your copy at themilkyway.ca/toolkit.